Hello out there to all you people on the go and multitaskers everywhere. This is Homeschool Mom Movie Maven, and this review is on Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, what I call a worthy culmination of 42 years and 9 films. My short take is, again, it is the culmination of 42 years and 9 films, the last, quote-unquote, Star Wars installment, which follows Rey as she seeks out the truth about her parentage. Who should go? Well, there's no inappropriate sexuality, there's a tiny amount of mild profanities, no blasphemy, but there is a good deal of very intense and cartoon violence, fighting scenes in a variety of frightening landscapes. They go underground, in extremely high seas, space, etc., so young teens or with parental discretion, any age. Here's my long take. I had read a lot of bad press about this latest Star Wars installment. It was Disney princified, rehashing of old storyline, feminist diatribe, devaluing of men. So two of my kids and I went in as fairly hostile audience members. Honestly, none of the complaints were truly justified. We all kept waiting for it to be bad or get bad, and it never happened. Now, if repetition is your irritant of choice, certainly there was an avalanche of nostalgic homages in this supposed last installment of the 42-year franchise, but that was to be expected. And director J.J. Abrams, contributor to Star Trek, Star Wars, and Mission Impossible installments, with his team of writers, does not disappoint, with exciting non-stop action, classically Star Warsian pseudo-science fantasy, exotic species, deeply committed and self-sacrificing leads, and smart-aleck supporting cast dialogue. The late Carrie Fisher appears thanks to CGI, leftover footage, and clever cinematography by Dan Mindell, who has lent his talents to many franchises, including other Star Wars, Mission Impossible, and Star Trek. The most prominent of supporting cast members also include a huge variety. There's Oscar Isaacs, who is a multi-talented actor whose resume includes The Nativity Story, Operation Finale, and X-Men is Poe, the wisecracking pilot. John Boyega is Finn, former First Order, which can also be read as the new stormtrooper, inductee, and Rey's best friend. There's Anthony Daniels reprising C-3PO as the only cast member to be in all 9 movies. Good trivia point. R2-D2's Kenny Baker would have been too, but he passed away. Domhnall Gleeson from About Time, the Coen brothers' version of True Grit and Peter Rabbit, is the comically nefarious General Hux, whose success rate is about that of Colonel Klink in Hogan's Heroes. Billy Dee Williams cheerily reprises Lando with contagious enthusiasm. Ian McDiarmid returns as the oozy evil Emperor Palpatine. The list goes on for miles. The majority of every character and actor who has ever appeared in a Star Wars movie shows up, regardless of whether they and or their characters are currently dead or not. Abrams' writing team includes himself, Chris Terrio from the DC Universe and Argo, Derek Connolly from Pokemon Detective Pikachu, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, for which I have a review on my blog, and Kong Skull Island. There's also Colin Trevorrow from Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. See, there is a lot of sci-fi fantasy credentials involved in it shows. This allegedly last Star Wars film examines who Rey, plays by Daisy Ridley from Branna's Murder on the Orient Express, really is, as she fights the last remnants of the Empire with a coalition of freedom fighters. As to having a female in the lead, I saw nothing wrong with their handling of this story decision. Anyone who has read previous reviews knows I am adamantly against rewrites to crowbar in females where men have previously starred, as in Ghostbusters 2, and I am on the record for looking with a jaundiced eye at female lead action movies. However, I'm also equally vocal in praise of well-done movies like Wonder Woman and characters like Black Widow, where the protagonist is awesome and the storyline well done, and the lead just happens to be a female. Hero first, woman second. Rey here is an action hero first who just happens to be a female, so well done her. The music by John Williams, who else, blends smoothly with all the rest of the franchise music. It is but a variation on the same themes, but that is not a bad thing. They don't call the original soundtrack the Star Wars Symphony for nothing. This iconic music is as much a character in all 9 of the movies as Chewie or R2 or Lando or Leia or, for that matter, the Millennium Falcon. The cinematography is visually spectacular, as you would expect from any Star Wars film. From a stark desert landscape to a fight surrounded by Cat 5 hurricane-level waves, from a space dogfight to a duel underground, the screenwriters went out of their way to be sure we get the length and breadth of how a Jedi deals with hostile environments of all kinds. Again, Dan Mindell did a great job. If it were not for the fact this movie is supposed to be the wrap-up to four decades of films catering to three generations of Star Wars fans, I would think they maybe had over-egged the pudding. As it was, there were both cheers and tears from the audience as the storyline went through its paces in a most satisfying effort to pull out all the stops. I couldn't help but see a parallel to another franchise, the long-running thread at the heart of the Blacklist's seven-season still-going-strong tale, wherein the FBI's most wanted, played by James Spader's Red Reddington, turns himself in to aid the FBI in hunting down criminals so dangerous and elusive the FBI doesn't even know they exist. But Red will only speak to Elizabeth Keene, a newbie Quantico grad who has never even heard of Reddington aside from his rap sheet at the beginning of the show. Though the titular storyline involves pursuing bad guys in clever ways, who Keene is to Red is the engine that propels the core of the show. And so it is with the Star Wars saga wrap-up films, which have explored Rey's search for closure and her own identity. Rey is their new version of Luke, the Padawan with inexplicably extraordinary Force abilities, who searches for her parents and is occasionally sorry she asked. There is something eternally appealing to the quest to reveal our origins, hearkening back to our search for our place in the universe and ultimately our relationship with our Creator. The annals of cinematic history is rife with examples of orphans searching for their place in the universe. Little Orphan Annie, Oliver Twist, Heidi, Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, Cosette from Les Mis, even Billy Batson from Shazam and Peter Pan all search for what they see as their missing piece. Some, like Billy Batson and Dorothy, discover they never truly lacked anything to begin with, and there was no place like home with people who already loved them. Others were disabused of idealized fantasies, and this is the identity crisis with which both Rey and her antagonist Kylo Ren, who is played by Adam Driver from Patterson, which I have a review on my blog, and Logan Lucky, another review on my blog, they both wrestle. Rey wants to know who her mom and dad were and why they left her. On the other hand, while Ren knows who his parents are, he is in a constant state of struggle and coming to terms with them and their beliefs. And boy, with six kids, isn't that a familiar theme? Due warning, beyond here be spoilers. Dovetailing with the search for identity embarked upon by the lead antagonists, the resolution for Kylo Ren comes from a very Christian-based theology. Ren has done terrible things, genocide, patricide, torture of innocents, random violence, all in the service of becoming a galactic tyrant, all very non-Jedi activities. For the three or four people in the solar system who might not know, a Jedi is a monk-like warrior who leads a fairly aesthetic existence while fighting, armed only with a lightsaber and his connection to the force of life, to ensure freedom and protection for innocents even at the cost of their lives. Ren is the polar opposite of this. Despite his parentage of having Princess Leia, the twin sister to Luke, a powerful Jedi Master Knight in his own right, and Han Solo, Luke's best friend, as his parents. But when Rey fatally bests him in battle, then, in an act of mercy, she shares some of her life force with him to heal his mortal wound, Ren, in turn, his back on what he has become. Ren repents, and when he dies, in a turnabout to save Rey, by reoffering all of his life force back to her, he disappears as Yoda and Obi-Wan had done, a sign of ultimate acceptance by the Jedi Force of his worthiness. So, with Ren's genuine repentance and his willingness to die for his one-time enemy, to love his neighbor as himself, came true redemption, a laudable and admirable lesson with which to close out, if this is truly the last, Star Wars saga movie. On a completely different topic, a lot of ink has been spilled over the same sex kiss. The filmmakers made a big deal about this, but it is truly much ado about nothing, and a ridiculous effort at some glad-handing political correctness. The kiss occurs during a World War II victory-like moment of joyous abandonment and celebration of life that everyone is hugging and kissing everyone else. I mean, they've just defeated the Empire. The kiss was about as sexual as if in the joy of the moment Poe had kissed Maz or Rey had smooched Chewbacca. It had the same feel as when Ernie kissed Bert on the forehead after they finished singing for George and Mary's wedding in It's a Wonderful Life. Were it not for the hypersensitivity in this artificially created lamestream media's constant attempts at shoving politically correct agendas down mainstream audiences' throats, I don't think anyone would have even noticed. Noticing it and attributing any particular significance to it hints at a subtext, but the kiss comes out of nowhere. And because of the attention brought to it in advertising campaigns, it effectively commits the cardinal sin of breaking the suspension of disbelief, needlessly popping the viewer out of this otherwise wonderful moment, which was 42 years in the making. The only other significant critique I would give is the insufficient amount of time given to the, as my kids put it, non-emo Kylo Ren. Ren spends the majority of his time in the previous movies growling behind a Vader-like mask, barking orders, destroying things in fits of anger, glowering, killing people, and generally being a really tough audience. Ren's moments of slight gentle humor at the end of this last movie, after his miraculous healing by Rey, are a surprise and delight. They are simple and little but effective moments when Ren is finally channeling his father, Han Solo, like saying ow after a fall or giving a wry smile and shrug as he pulls a lightsaber from out of nowhere to school some opponents. These are the best moments in all of Ren's appearances in all of the entire franchise. They are memorable, but tragically ever so brief minutes before he dies. Would that they had made an entire feature film with this aspect of his character, and who knows, with all the retros, maybe they will. So, after all the reveals and sort of character deaths and familial connections resolved within the Star Wars universe, you might think they really mean it when they say this is the last Star Wars movie to ever be made. Everyone who believes that, shout out loud. I hear crickets. Okay. I agree. I don't think this is the last, and that's just fine. So I'll see you at the next final Star Wars movie. And remember, if you're listening in your car or on an iPhone, you can get the full original review, including pictures and links, at www.homeschoolmommoviemaven, that's Maven spelled with an I, MAVIN.com. And take it from a homeschool mom, education doesn't always have to come from a book. Sometimes it can come from recognizing Christian themes of self-sacrifice in a well-loved franchise that you grew up with.